Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
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 We've already gone insane.
Yes. Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast in which three random guys read science fiction novels, then annoy you by chattering about them for about half an hour or more. I am joined, as ever, by Barry and Kevin, both of whom are sometimes surprisingly human-like, just like the characters in this book.
Sometimes.
I strive to be more human-like like Data.
Intriguing.
Fully functional.
So today,
getting there,
we are discussing The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet.
By
Becky Chambers, chosen by Barry. Barry, would you give us a reading of the back of the book, please?
Sure. Rosemary Harper doesn't expect much when she joins the crew of the aging Wayfarer. While the patched-up ship has seen better days, it offers her a bed, a chance to explore the far-off corners of the galaxy, and most importantly, some distance from her past. An introspective young woman who learned early to keep to herself, she's never met anyone remotely like the ship's diverse crew, including Sissix, the exotic reptilian pilot, chatty engineers Kizzy and Jenks, who keep the ship running, and Ashby, their noble captain. Life aboard the Wayfarer is chaotic and crazy, exactly what Rosemary wants. It's also about to get extremely dangerous when the crew is offered the job of a lifetime. Tunneling wormholes through space to a distant planet is definitely lucrative, and will keep them comfortable for years. But risking your life wasn't part of the plan. In the far reaches of deep space, the tiny Wayfarer crew will confront a host of unexpected mishaps and thrilling adventures that force them to depend on each other. To survive, Rosemary's got to learn how to rely on this assortment of oddballs, an experience that teaches her about love and trust, and that having a family isn't necessarily the worst thing in the universe.
Very lyrical. Kevin, in five words or more, what did you think of The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet? Does not count as a word.
Overall, it worked as narrative.
I knew that this would come and back and bite me in the face. Great.
With lots of teeth or just a few?
All the teeth.
Meow.
Did you have anything else to say about it, or are we done now?
I could add more than five words.
Yes, thank you.
By the end, I liked it, which seems to be true of most of the books I read lately.
Six words. I originally had on my script in two words or more, but I didn't want to tempt you too far.
Good job.
I have another part. A couple of words.
Let me give you a couple more words there. Okay, I don't know. It reminded me of Firefly, actually, quite a bit, in structure, and it was quite episodic. So it was interesting. There were little nitpicky things that bothered me for no real rational reason, like, you know, they use the phrase 10 days, because I guess they're metric now instead of using week or something.
Okay.
The part of my brain that like went nuts was sort of like, you know, getting in the way saying, but that's unrealistic. You know, language doesn't get longer. It gets, you know, into more colloquial, simpler things. They would have just called it a metric week or something. And then they would have just abbreviated that to a week. And then eventually they would have like, you know, had like an interstitial piece where they would have said, oh, by the way, we mean 10 days for a week now, you know, instead of 7 days, like in the olden times. But anyway, back to the story.
Look, we immediately went to a 10-day week all at once, so we didn't have any confusion as to what was really supposed to happen. We didn't have some sort of bleed-through period. Please take your pop filter off your microphone.
It's supposed to be there. It likes it.
It's still on there.
I'm not sure about that, but
I can put my finger between mine, and it seems to work just fine.
It's really close.
Okay, great.
But not touching.
Thank you so much.
I'm not touching you.
So, Barry, what did you think of this?
It was a good road trip book. I mean, it was like a giant, long road trip, and then they came home.
Yep.
And lots of things happened. And they were incredibly correct about everything.
The best kind of correct?
No, politically correct.
Well.
So, some of the reviews that I read before picking the book kind of mentioned that it goes into it a little over the top at the beginning, which I think I'd have to agree with.
Goes into what?
The political correctness. Mm. It's a little thick at the beginning of the book to me.
Okay. You mean like the multi-species stuff or other other bits?
I think it actually doesn't change in density over the course of the entire book. I think it's just when you start listening, it's laid on a little thick, but it didn't actually detract from the story for me.
Glad to hear it. So what you're saying is that the horrible, horrible tolerance that you found inside the book did not offend
you. We live in
you.
Such intolerant times, I just felt it was different. I was intolerant of it.
We're feeling jealous.
Actually, I kind of was. I mean, where else am I going to hook up with some hot alien?
The internet.
Wow.
The internet in space.
Great. Okay. Well, yeah, I found this to be a sort of very nice and comfortable read. We've been reading a lot of books in dystopias and with terrifying anti-heroes and, you know, a lot of bad things happening. And this is mostly a story about a comfortable work environment.
One person's dystopia is another person's safe space.
Apparently.
Well, right. It was a very, like, it wasn't like some intellectually challenging, like, you know, thing, really. It was just sort of like a comfortable, oh, okay. Right. It's kind of like a nice walkthrough sci-fi.
Like, it's like one of those reptile people's warm blankets.
Yes. I'm trying to avoid damning it with faint praise because I think this is what the author set out to do, and I think she just accomplished it.
I think she nailed it.
Yeah. Let's hope that's what she was saying.
Well, yeah, if this
you're
is like
good
her
job
idea
in
of
like
a terrifying dystopia with full of like horrible monsters that are sometimes personally insensitive, then I think that she kind of overshot the mark. But if she's going for a comfortable reading experience, then this was fantastic. It reminded me a bit of The Golden Age of the Solar Clipper by Nathan Lowell. This is not space opera. These people are spending their time working and socializing. They're not struggling against an evil empire. And yeah, there's conflict and suspense, and there's even tragedy at the end. But most of the book is just, you know, hanging out with your friends. And
They out-federated the Federation.
Pretty much.
Hanging out with your coworkers.
Right. And then finally, it gets points because it pretty much wrapped up all the loose ends in a very nice, tidy bundle.
But there's a sequel.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's a whole series, and that's fine.
A third one's been announced. It even has ratings on Goodreads already, despite it not having a title.
Preemptively, I'm just going to call it Fine.
I mean, was most impressed by that.
Well, it's time to get this ragtag spaceship flying to our discussion section, for we are sci-fi.
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 Load up the ambi.
And welcome to our discussion section, where we can talk about the book until it's time to build a wormhole back home.
Drop the cage.
So this is a story of a bunch of construction workers that get a big job.
Road trip.
Yep. They make some repairs, they get into some minor interspecies conflicts, and then they wind up nearly getting killed in what might be the opening shot of a galactic war. Until that point, though, this is basically a workplace drama on a spaceship. Did we find the story of people doing their jobs compelling?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do like this kind of blue-collar sci-fi stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's that space between, like, you know, pure desperation living on a spaceship and trying to fix thing after thing after thing and to stay alive and, you know, sort of like the Star Trek universe where everything's hunky-dory and you're just zipping around doing whatever you need to do. And
yeah. So now, I really thought that this was very close to the Star Trek universe. The only real difference is they don't have replicators or transporters.
Hmm, yeah. Nor warp fields and stuff.
For some reason, I didn't really get a huge Star Trek vibe, even though, I mean, if I think about it after you said that, yeah, there are a lot of similarities, but I get, maybe just because I latched on the Firefly thing so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it was more like a, you know, Battlestar Galactica reboot style world.
Okay.
That sort of technology level.
Okay, I could see that. Yeah, I did sort of keep on thinking of it as sort of the novelization of a non-existent television series.
That thought did cross my mind as well.
This is a book that kind of lives or dies on its characters. Do we have any favorite characters?
Probably.
So my favorite was Dr. Chef.
Yes.
Which I think is a great combination.
That's a combination that can go terribly wrong if it's taken the opposite way.
I actually love the economics of it, right? Your doctor is never, you know, terribly busy in this world, right? On occasion, you need your doctor, and you need your chef at least three times a day. In between, they can play doctor.
Interesting phrase.
So, Yes.
Yes. I kept on sort of picturing Dr. Phlox was part of the reason that I was... I mean, he doesn't look, according to the description, remotely like Dr. Phlox, but he's got the same sort of, oh, these humans, they're so funny kind of demeanor going on.
Yeah, I can see that after you mentioned that. That's not what I was visualizing, but...
Right. I'm not saying I was right to do so, but...
Of course you are. Your brain is always right.
That is true.
At least to him.
Yes.
So, now, one of the characters, Ohan, was a pair. This group entity of two.
Oh, I thought he was a P-E-A-R.
Yes, I'm sure. Because things went all pear-shaped. So, he was this group entity of two, bonded together by this virus called the Whisperer. And this virus is also killing him. And in the end, one of the crew members decides to cure the disease and split the two of them up to save the individual members of this pair, despite the expressed wishes of the group entity, who basically said, no, I want to survive. This would be killing me. What did we think about this?
It's an interesting dilemma.
They should do it.
He's the pilot. They needed him.
Actually, I was sort of awaiting and hoping for sort of a self-sacrifice, but that didn't happen. I was waiting for it to happen right in the middle of their wormhole problem.
Right.
And they were like, oh, crap, I can't navigate. I'm dying right the second, you know, conveniently, narratively. So, you know, kill me and I could save everybody else that way or something. And then I'll come back. I guess now that I'm talking about it, it reminds me of, what is it, Tuvok, whatever that stupid thing was.
Well, I did think about
not
that.
Not Tuvok, though.
Tuvoks or no.
the conjoined.
Right.
The transporter accident.
Yeah, the Neelix and...
Right.
Tuvix,
I believe Tuvix. It was.
It's like Tuvix. It's a, what kind of candy bar is it? Tuvix.
Does it involve caramel?
It's in the center and it's... Anyway.
Today, Kevin makes a dirty joke that not even he understands.
I'm not going to even try to visualize anything.
Too late.
It's too terrifying.
Gooey center.
Stop happening. Brain, stop happening.
Okay.
Do I get the bonus points for the podcast today on
not,
Breaking Kevin?
Neither of you gets any points whatsoever.
Okay, I'm not playing anymore.
I didn't think you were.
But no, I thought it was an interesting idea, and that I guess it wasn't a surprise when they, you know, they go to the happy planet where they're all, you know, we live to be a million and we're super smart, you know, and all this other stuff, and. It's like, of course, those pairs won't like it because that virus is sort of like, you know, messing with his judgment and stuff.
Yeah, but that another way of saying that is the two of them together are a different individual that would, in fact, be killed.
Right, right. And they did kind of make that clear. So I guess it seems like the virus is just, you know, some form of like, I guess it's more symbiotic than parasitic, but... Because it does provide them with an enhanced intelligence and some other stuff.
Right. But you could call it a parasite because it actually does eventually kill the hosts.
Right. So it's a symbiotic parasite. So I guess the best...
It's a down-up. It's a 1-0.
the best of all worlds should be, I guess, that they stay a pair until they're about ready to die, and then their death ritual is, here, now inject yourself with the... You know, you're already dead, so you might as well, you know, take this, or is it some weird kind of like, no, it's better for both of us to die than have a new person come out of it. Like,
right, which is what they're actually saying, and they actually are refusing to be treated, and that's actually the final wrinkle on it is, well, if you just go by a purely utilitarian standpoint, then when the virus is about to kill them, you should cure them of the virus, because then, you know, if three lives were involved before, at least two of them survive.
Oh, right, and I think the virus just dies, right? But
yeah.
But the thing that seemed weird about that whole thing was that it was a dying race, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was not the one where they're like, yeah, something bad happened, which I don't remember now, and like, so we're just going to let a race die off because it would be work to procreate or something.
No. That was the doctor's race.
Oh, that was the doctor's race. Okay.
Where are the Ent wives?
<too.
laughs> Yes. Okay. I guess in fact, I kept confusing the doctor and Ohan all the way throughout most of the book.
We are the best readers. Just the best.
I like to point out we didn't actually read it. We listened to it.
Yeah.
I'm tired of that distinction.
There is no distinction.
Listening is just as good as reading, despite what people at cocktail parties might say to you.
I'm not saying that it's a bad thing.
I am.
It's
cocktail
a technical
party
distinction.
People are stupid liars or something.
Okay.
Fake news.
Fake news. There's no such thing as fake news. Everything's fake.
Look, when the polls are negative, they're just fake.
And it's time for our usual question. Was there tea? Let me answer, hell yes, described with enough enthusiasm that I'll forgive it for describing random hot beverages as tea.
Do you have a tea rage opinion?
Well, let's see. I only will count the fun tea. They describe boring tea and fun tea, I believe. And the fun tea is like really caffeinated, so it might actually be tea. Whereas the other stuff is just, you know, herbal tisane. Actually, herbal tisane crap.
There was a extended scene where I think Dr. Chef is making tea and watching it, you know, bloom forth as he puts it into the water. And
exactly.
It's quite poetic.
And that's why I forgive them for referring to the other stuff as tea.
They don't know in the future that much.
It's just like after the great tea wars, when all of humanity banded against a man named Stephen because he was too annoying.
Kevin, this is our moment.
It's, you know, it's how in Star Trek, how, you know, he says Earl Grey tea, but he really just means tea. You know, they refer to all tea as Earl Grey tea.
Just to piss me off.
Yes.
Earl Grey hot.
And that's when, well, let's not visualize something terrible.
Okay.
So on to other parts of the book.
Moving quickly.
What did we think of the AI and Jenks? I guess it's Lovey and Jenks relationship.
Man on computer core action, literally, but maybe not in the way you might think.
It could be. They might have left that scene out.
That's true of almost anything, but yes.
I wouldn't say that was my favorite scene, but I would say that was one of the more memorable scenes.
I'm inside you.
Inside the computer core, that is.
Yeah. It, for some reason, that sort of set me off on this. Well, how would this kind of AI develop? Why would somebody build a general ship's intelligence and then say, oh, and then, by the way, under these circumstances, you should totally fall in love with your...
I'm sure there isn't like an if statement that says, you know...
Computers are simple if-then statements.
Yes. Once you increment this counter past 255 and you get an overflow error, then you fall in love.
Well, isn't that how it works?
And then you buy a body kit.
Yes. For most of the book, I was like, so they don't have robots? Because they just talked about robots. That seems stupid. And then later on, they kind of made a reference that made it sound more like replicants or something. So
right. It seemed pretty obvious that the body kit was supposed to be a bio kit.
Right. And so that wasn't clear until they were talking about, you know, doing a body scan of people and they might get caught. And I'm like, oh, so they mean it looks like a person, not like it's just an android. Because I'm like, oh, you don't have smart androids in this universe or something? That seems stupid. Like.
Today on Kevin Critiques Your Universe.
Isn't that what this is about? Critiquing the universe?
Well, it is a book.
Yes. I mean, I have a soft spot for any book that discusses sentient AI. So, you know, even if the rest of the book had been horrible, I still would have been like, well, you know, at least they discussed a sentient AI. So it was not all bad.
Oh, yeah. I really like the AI rights section. I would think, though, that unless this was a really, really rare event, that this must have, you know, come up before.
They did say it was illegal, so it must have happened unless they preemptively completely. Well, I guess they did say that someone came up that were, quote, smarter than us and said, you know, don't do it. But I guess it was unclear whether it had been done at all or whether they just said that would be a bad idea.
Fair enough.
I kept wondering at the end when they reset Lovey, right, because she was so damaged.
Right.
Why didn't it just keep resetting her until she loved him again?
Actually, I thought that they described that pretty well, despite, you know, I was initially a little bit annoyed because, oh, we'll hit the reset button.
What a wacky
idea. And then she'll be fine.
Have you tried powering it off and back on again?
But they actually did a good enough job explaining, oh, basically it's a 50-50 chance in the boot up process whether she sees these files and they work or they don't work.
Right. And so it doesn't work. But
so it's rebuilding a RAID array, essentially.
Yeah. Randomly.
He's minus the parody disk or something.
Right.
Yeah. I was actually, which didn't happen, but I was all set for them to either explicitly or you find out after the fact that he actually did have the body kit on the ship and that,
right,
and that they saved her by sticking her in the body. So, and so at first I thought that.
Why, yes, I do have the maturity level of a six-year-old. Six.
It's the same in Latin. Yeah, no, because it seemed like it was really going towards like, oh crap, we can't fix the, you know, the ship's computer, but we can, we still, you know, they kept saying she was still in the core.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, well, okay, we'll just download her into the body and everything will be fine.
Just crazy there. I mean, yeah, so that was where I thought they were going as well.
And then when it didn't happen, I thought, see, there were a couple parts that, I mean, maybe it was just me, that kind of confused me. Like they would say, oh, Jenks like jumped out into a pod and like ran off.
Yeah.
And then it seemed like the next scene he was back. And I was like, what?
They went out to get him.
Yeah, they did. But I kind of missed the part where that actually succeeded. And then he was back. It seemed like they didn't really... I don't know. There was something
happened off screen.
Yeah, I know. But
you leave the room, I'm still a person.
No, I know you're just a figment of my room.
Shut your lying mouth.
Let me just try a little experiment. Let me cover my face here.
Ah, you're gone. You're
peekaboo.
Gone. No. There were three or four times in the book where like that, and then they were talking about the alien cult that you know just randomly popped up. I couldn't quite figure out what was going on with that, but this is kind of what I mean by like a couple of nitpicks that kind of just when I was going along, I'm like, huh, wait, what happened? I mean, I just sort of accept, okay, he's back, but it seemed like I missed a chapter somewhere or missed a page in there, and then the way it was
missed a chapter.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm making
Barry
more
does
of
it. Have a habit of getting stuck in time loops.
Yes,
I'm making more of it than it really was. But there were just a few little points like that in the book, which I can't remember any other examples. But it.
What did you think of the limited clone hate?
Oh yeah, from the weird, you know, the seafood species or whatever.
The lobster people.
Yes.
We hate clones.
If only I had a vat of butter.
God. Yes, you should become part of the Federation.
You'll make a tasty addition.
Yeah, I don't know. That was stupid. No, I think they were doing the addressing the various future, you know, potential issues one by one in the book, where sort of like, you know, AI, is that sentient or not? You know, does it have any rights to cloning? Is that good or not? You know,
hello, so, it's got the word intelligence in the name.
Right. Right. It's like, okay, multiple species, you know, sexual relations. Is that okay? Like, I don't know. You got feathers. Is that weird or not? Like,
sounds hot.
You know, so they were kind of going through the whole range of things.
Yeah, and it was also a way of bridging the gap between Corbin and Sissix, because they made her his basically citizenship sponsor.
Right.
They were forced to hang out together for a whole year.
Yeah.
Her species didn't particularly care for clones either, so.
They didn't particularly like them, but they weren't actually outlawed was the right trick there. So Sissix was an alien from a planet where basically families were kind of like polycircles or love piles, basically.
Love piles, huh?
You know, they...
Are you my hatch father or are you my...
Exactly.
Egg? Was it egg parent or...
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, sort of.
There was several stages.
Feather family and
right.
This
All
family.
All these
and...
different gradations of family. And then, you know, they gradually discover, oh, you know, the ship is her family. And
well, Rosemary, I'd really like to... invite you to our little pleasure pile. I don't know.
It was sort of like a Thanksgiving dinner, just with a lot extra.
Yeah.
A little bit of zing.
Exactly.
There was a statement that stuck out to me, which I really enjoyed. I think it was around the middle of the book, and someone's basically describing why there's problems in the universe, and I believe his response is, well, basically people are assholes. 90% of the problems in this universe are created by assholes.
Okay.
Yep.
I thought it was entertaining. I don't know why. I bookmarked it. I could play it. I'm sure it'd be fair use.
It actually would be, but let's not. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Well, it's time to take the injection and temporarily break up the group entity that is this podcast. If you like this podcast or even feel neutral in a non-negative way, we'd appreciate a subscribe and review on iTunes. You can also give us a like on our Facebook page, where you can maybe find out about upcoming episodes, or send us an email at sf3podcast@gmail.com. Our theme song is Love Amplifier by SafeWord, available on Magnatune. And until next time, we are Sci-Fi.
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 Yeah.